let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
It's This Week in America. Thank you for listening and watching today's program. Mark Freimark has lived for most of his life in the southwestern United States. He served in the United States Air Force for over a decade, including time in Operation Desert Storm, the first Gulf War, in Saudi Arabia. Now, during his law enforcement career, he was a detention officer, a deputy sheriff, and later a city police officer, all within the state of Arizona. Mark currently spends his time sharing his experiences in an effort to help PTSD patients and increase public awareness about post-traumatic stress disorder. The new book, Headshot, How I Survive with Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, is his story, and he joins us on This Week in America. Mark, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us on the show today.
Thank you, Rick. An honor and a privilege to be here. It surely is.
This book is going to touch so many people, and it's interesting because this is not something necessarily that came easy to you. What this was about, a 12-year proposition where you struggled with how you were going to present your story, how best to present it to help people. This really took over a decade to put together, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I originally started it, Rick, and I would go into my therapy appointments, and my doctors would say, man, you're coming in here and you're a mess. You can't even communicate with us. Can you write some notes for us throughout the week and bring those notes with you? So I did, and they were so feeble at first because I was so far gone into the PTSD cycle that I would walk in there literally with some yellow Post-it notes, and it would just say a simple word on it, like night, bad dreams. And it progressed from there as the medications and the therapy started taking a hold and helping me out of it. And then I started with another pile of notes, because some of my friends in the police department were saying, hey, man, you should really document what's going on with you. And so I did that. I fused those two piles of notes together, and 12 years later, it turned into this book.
Let's go back to that day. You described it as a hot Arizona morning, which I guess could be most mornings probably in Arizona. You are out on patrol, and you hear a call, and you respond to this call as backup. This is a call, a possible suicidal subject in a trailer park. Pick up what happened there and how this turned into literally 6 seconds that changed your life.
Well, we got, like you said, a possible suicidal subject at a trailer park. Myself and two other officers responded to the call. When we got there, we talked to a traveling nurse, and she said, I check in on this guy every week. She said, when I got here today, he told me he wrecked his van, his girlfriend broke up with him. I think he's off his psych meds, and then she told us that he's really depressed. He's been drinking all night, and just a myriad of other things. And it sounded like the guy was in a crisis situation. She feared he may be suicidal.
It's interesting. So as you described that the nurse, you said her tone was a little different. She described him as, well, he could be a jerk. And you were sort of concerned. In fact, you even recorded what she said because this was a little out of the ordinary.
Yeah, and we got a rundown from her, and then we asked her, you know, the cursory stuff, like, does he have any weapons? She said, yeah, he does, but she couldn't describe it, so she'd never really laid eyes on it, so we weren't really certain how she knew that he had that weapon or whatever. So I said, hey, we get a lot of calls like this every week. We're going to talk to him, calm him down. If we need to, we'll bring out a crisis team for him. And I asked her, okay, what's his name? She said, his name's Jerry. I said, where's Jerry? She said, he's down that hallway behind one of those closed doors. And then before she left, I said, wait outside. And I said, before you leave, I said, what kind of guy is he? And she did. She said, all I can tell you is he can be a real jerk. He's got a gun. And I'd be careful if I were you.
And so those words really caught your attention. Like I said, you recorded them. You had to repeat it, and you recorded these.
I did, and I put chills on my arm every time I recite what she said to us. We all looked, me and the other two officers looked at each other like, boy, that's totally unusual to hear somebody in the medical community make a statement like that about their patient. So I recorded it. She ran it all down again, and then me and the other two officers, the lead officer was, I call him Ron Solo in the book. I've changed all the names to protect identities. And then the other officer, his name was Pete Ronan. We devised a quick tactical plan. So, okay, let's bring the guy out, talk to him, and get a crisis team if he needs us, if he needs it. But it was a middle of the day, but it was a dark trailer. We had all the lights off, all the blinds pulled, and it looked like a cave. And so we walked into this hallway a few steps, and Ron Solo, the lead officer, was up front, and he had his taser out. in case he ran out to attack us. We could just, it was so tight we couldn't move around. Anyway, and then Ron was up there, and then Pete and I were back behind him with our weapons out in the event that this gun thing was actually true. We wanted to be prepared for that. So we were all in position, and then we asked Ron, okay, Ron, go ahead and call out Jerry. So Ron yells down this hallway, this darkened hallway, and he yells out to Jerry, and he says, Jerry, this is Officer Solo from the police department. And from behind one of those doors, Rick, this Jerry guy screams back at us in a voice that sounded just like this. This is what he yells back at us. Screw you. Well, Ron turned back around and looked at us, and I mean, we all must have looked like we'd just seen a ghost, because it was a terrifying thing. It sounded like the devil himself was behind one of those doors yelling at us. And I just put my hand up. I said, okay, calm down. I said, let's just, he sounds really angry. Let's just keep him talking and get this guy calmed down. Call him out again, Ron. So Ron turned back around and called him out again. And this time he said, Jerry, he said, this is Officer Solo from the police department. We just want to talk to you. And the guy, Jerry, responded to us again, and he said, come and get me, in that same voice. And I said, no, we're not going to get anybody. That man can die from old age back there before we go kicking in
exactly.
Any doors. We're not going to do that. So finally, I said, let's just calm him down. Keep talking. As long as we're talking, Ron, we're doing the right thing. So Ron turns, looks down the hallway again, and he yells down to him. He says, Jerry, he says, which door are you behind? And from behind one of those doors, bam! He shoots. Now there's a bullet zinging through one of those doors at us, and it's coming down this hallway, and in the middle of that hallway is Ron. On this side is myself, and on this other side of the hallway is Officer Pete Ronan. So the odds of that bullet hitting one of the three of us is almost 100%.
Well, it's interesting. You described that as the fatal funnel of fire, and I found that really interesting because, and you knew once you were there, once he started shooting, the chances were 100% one of you was going to take a bullet at that time.
Yeah, it would be almost impossible for that bullet to not hit the three of us because we were just a hallway full of humanity, Ron in the center, me and Pete. And here comes the lead, you know, right at us. So we, after he shot, we back out of the hallway. I went to this side, and Pete and Ron jumped into the other side. Well, behind them was the exit, and they're screaming at me, come on, Mark, let's get out. We got to go. And I put out over the radio, hold traffic, shots fired, subject with a rifle. Now, we didn't know what kind of weapon he had, but we're trying to put out worst-case scenario information in case that's the last transmission we can put out to our partners right. That are coming to help us. So, and then I looked across the hallway, which I couldn't cross that hallway because there's, you know, rounds coming down it. And I said, no, we can't. I can't cross this hallway. I'll catch the next round. And then I yelled to him. I said, and if we got to contain the threat to the back of this trailer, if we give him these front windows on this trailer, he'll snipe us off before we get to our cars, and he'll kill all the neighbors before we can evacuate. Right after that, that little brief exchange and that radio traffic, we hear this bang, and it was the sound of a door slamming up against the wall. This guy, Jerry, had just opened the door, and now he's running down out of that dark hallway, and he's screaming at us in that same voice. He's screaming at us, you're going to die. And we hear his footsteps coming. He's like over 200-pound man, over 6 feet tall.
You described him like Frankenstein, and you describe it. I can see this picture, and I can only imagine because you lived it. This angry, you describe it, contorted face as he's coming towards you.
As he came out of that hallway, Rick, as soon as I seen that gun barrel come out of that darkness, my body's fight or flight mode took over and my vision tunneled down. So I was immediately looking through a sight picture about this big. And in that sight picture, I saw his gun barrel coming out of the darkness. And his hand was right out in front of him like this. And all I could see was his hand holding that gun barrel looking right at me. And his wild eyes, well, like you see in this poster, that's the exact sight that I saw of that man. And that's why I put it on the cover of my book, because I wanted the visual audience to see exactly what we were facing.
And you knew, you hear the gun go off, and you knew that you took a headshot. The name of the book is Headshot, How I Survived with Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. Mark Freimark is our guest on the program, the author. That's F-R-E-I-M-A-R-K. The book is available at bookventure.com/bookstore. You can go to amazon.com, of course. If you do a review and Mark gets a number of reviews, I'll actually promote the book for him. So you can check it out at Amazon, also Barnes & Noble. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and you can link on directly to that book. So you're there. You've taken the headshot. Explain what happens after that, because you end up, shots are fired, he goes down. You end up actually trying to save his life. Not only save his life, you administer CPR for the man that just shot you in the head.
Right. As he came out of that hallway, Rick, I want to backtrack a moment. And that is, when I saw his eyes in that gun barrel, and he immediately saw me and turned that gun on me, and he screamed at me one last time. He said, "You're going to die." And I'm looking right down the barrel of that gun, and I'm trying to get my gun up on target, and everything goes into slow motion, and it seemed like my gun weighed 2 tons. And I saw his wild, contorted face, and it just looked so – it was incredible, undescribable. And I'm looking down the barrel of his gun trying to get my gun up on target, and then all of a sudden, boom, he fires, and I get hit with something in my right eye. And my right eye slams shut, and in a millisecond right behind it, I get this huge fireball that erupts out and feels like my whole head is on fire. And I fall backwards, and I start recoiling from it. And so I only have vision out of my partially opened left eye. And I thought, oh my gosh, I just took a headshot. I just took a headshot, and I'm not going to make it. And I see this guy, Jerry, and in my tunneled vision, all of a sudden I see these little flicks of light. Flick, 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 flick. And I instantly realize, okay, at least my partners are shooting him. So I start pulling the trigger on my gun, and your hearing actually shuts down too when you're in a flight or flight situation. So instead of hearing the loud boom, boom, boom noises, I hear exactly a noise this loud. It goes, that's as loud as my gun was going off. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I must have forgot to load a bullet. What kind of a Keystone Cop situation is this? I forgot to load a bullet and I'm in a gunfight. But I start falling down, and then I see Jerry start to fall simultaneously at the exact same time. And his face transformed, Rick, from that angry, contorted, wild look. And it changes, and it goes into this incredibly sad look. Yes. And without saying a word, he transmits a million words and a million thoughts to me in an instant. And just his expression, he tells me, oh my God, I just made the biggest mistake of my life, and I'm not going to survive, and I'm sorry. And so he went from the angriest person I've ever seen in my life to one of the saddest things I've ever seen in a second. And he starts falling, and we're falling together simultaneously like two dominoes. That's primarily because my two partners had started firing at him after he shot at me. And their gunfire combined actually put him down. But yeah, then we fell to the ground, and I get up, and they look at me and they said, oh my God. Pete said to Ron, the other officer, he said, get Mark outside. He's been shot. He's been shot. And I said, yeah, I've been shot. I've been shot. I can't open my eye, and I'm thinking I got a bullet in my head. And I put out on the radio 998, which means I'm in a shooting, and 999 means I'm critically injured and I'm not going to survive, so I need emergency help. But they got me outside, and Ron starts looking at me, and he doesn't say anything. And I want some feedback from him, so I just yell at him. I'm like, what? Meaning like, what do I look like? And he says, I don't see anything, Mark. And I said, what are you talking about, Ron? And he says, yeah, I think he missed you. And I said, that's impossible. How did I get this blood all over me? And he said, I think it's his blood. Well, we don't have time to process this or thank our lucky stars or any of that. So we run back in the trailer, and realizing that apparently he missed me. we start doing CPR on him. And now I've gone from shock to now I'm angry at this guy, Jerry. I'm like, why did you do that? And I start screaming that at him. And I'm down there, and I start doing ventilations on him, and my partner, Pete, he starts doing the CPR compressions on his chest, and it just turns into a very gory scene. And apparently my gun was working. I just didn't hear it because my hearing had muffled down, and there were six holes in the front of him right on his chest. And every time my partner, Pete, did a chest compression on him, these six little tubes of muscle and everything were pumping up out of him.
And you were shot, and I understand it was a blank that actually shot you.
Yeah, after our detectives got there and ran through the ballistics and the trajectories of all the rounds and everything, they discovered what Jerry had done was, in his initial thing, he was like crouched down behind his bed waiting for us to open that door to his bedroom. And when we didn't, he shot through that door, but because he was down so low, the round went through the door and stuck up in the ceiling up above where we were standing. Then when he came out and made his charge at us, because we wouldn't come in after him, he saw me in the living room, and he fired his gun, and the next round that rolled up in that revolver was a blank. What he had done was, in his top dresser drawer where he kept all of his ammunition, he had various types of rounds and calibers. Well, he inadvertently loaded a blank round. So when he caught me in the living room and tried to blow my head off with that round that rolled up was a blank. All the other rounds were live rounds. Had he gotten one more round off, he would have finished me off because he would have been point blank on me.
This whole story is in the book Headshot, How I Survived with Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. Mark Freimark is our guest on the program, the author. That's Freimark. I knew time would go by too quickly. We'll have to do more of this. We got a couple minutes left in the program. You take us through everything you went through, and it was years of paranoia and struggling and the medications and the side effects and the suicidal thoughts, all of that. In just the couple minutes we have left at the end, what is the new normal for you now, and how did you get to the point where, okay, I can live with this, I can deal with this, not only can I live with this, I'm reaching out to help other people. How did you get to this point?
I got to this point through 12 and a half years of therapy, trial and error on the various medications that doctors would prescribe me and then transition me into others. I get a tremendous amount of help from a group therapy that I go through. That's sponsored by a group that I support and now try to help out. It's called PISTOL, and that group is Post-Incident Stress and Trauma for Law Enforcement. They provide free counseling for active and retired police officers. And if you'd like to give to that organization, it's www.pistol.org, PISTLE.org. And those guys have helped me tremendously. I'm currently in counseling. I've gathered a ton of tools over the years, and I've documented most of those in the book and basically given you a checklist and some forms that people that suffer from PTSD can actually utilize to help them, to keep them from the ultimate side effect of PTSD, and that's suicide. And I've been at that doorstep many times. And if you know someone that has this, or you think you might, and it doesn't have to be a shooting, you don't have to be a police officer to get this, you can go through PTSD through sexual trauma or car accidents even. I mean, very common things that can spark this into existence on people.
The book is so enlightening to the average person that hears about post-traumatic stress disorder. It really lays it out there, and the consequences that you couldn't be a police officer. You apply for workman's comp. They tell you right off the bat you're going to be denied. It's not going to happen. They follow you. Everything that seems to happen in the beginning sort of adds to the paranoia that you've gone through. That the story is laid out, and for someone suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or knowing someone who does, the book is a godsend. It will guide you through the process. It's called Headshot, How I Survived with Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. Mark Freimark has been our guest on the program. That's F-E-F-R-E-I-M-A-R-K. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and link on to a website that will have information on the book. The book is available at bookventure.com/bookstore. Of course, at Amazon, you get 50 reviews, and they'll be promoting the book for Mark, which will help a lot more people. And, of course, it's available as well at barnesandnoble.com. Mark, I hope we have the chance to do this again. Thank you so much for being with us on the program and sharing your story. It will be helpful to many, many other people.
I certainly hope so. And they can also check out the website, which will launch in a couple of weeks. It's www.headshot.world, W-O-R-L-D.
And we will have that available on our website as well. The book, again, Headshot, How I Survive with Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. The author is Mark Freimark, our guest on This Week in America. Information, of course, at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.